Hey, welcome back to American Heritage Podcast. My guest today is Kurt Balash. He is a veteran, an entrepreneur, and a professional woodworker. He runs his own business. It's called Balash Woodworks. He does this out of his house. I think he has a couple of employees who he has working for him too. He's making awesome things like tables and doors and cutting boards and rolling pins and all kinds of really neat stuff. He's an awesome guy, and we have an awesome conversation about why it is people need to quit going to college and start going back to trade school. He's on a mission to kind of bring the trade school thing back into reality, and he is wanting to start one in his local area after learning that the Fort Bragg trade school got shut down. So he's trying to teach people woodwork, and he's got all kinds of cool videos where he's demonstrating things like how to make cuts and measure board feet and all kinds of cool stuff. So check him out. You can visit his Facebook page by searching Facebook for Balash Woodworks. That's B-A-L-L-A-S-H Woodworks. Excited to bring you guys that show, but first I got to tell you about a new sponsor to the podcast, and that's Really Designs. So I've been doing business with these guys for a while. They make all of my apparel. I have hats and t-shirts and stickers, and they make hoodies and handbags and all kinds of really cool stuff. It's run by veterans, David and his wife, Ginger. They run this store all by themselves. It's a print-on-demand business, and they've really, really stepped up to help me with my stuff. So my Max Effort shirt, Praise the Lord, Pass the Ammo, it all comes from Really Designs, and you can check them out at www.reallydesigns.biz.
Name, like what he preferred to be called?
Oh, you can just call me Seth.
Okay, Seth. Yeah, I wasn't sure. Sometimes people are still like, yeah, call me Breeze or whatever it is, you know?
Nope, man. Okay, cool. Nothing fancy for me here. But yeah, thanks for coming on the show, man. So I've been following you and been seeing you online for a while with your woodworking stuff. You're in a lot of the same groups I'm in as far as like the Vetrepreneur and Ambitious Vet and some of those groups. So is that your full-time job?
Yeah, so that's all I do nowadays is I teach wood shop and I build stuff out of wood, custom stuff.
That's cool, man.
Yeah, I've really found that it was a transition process. I had to run a full-time job for a little bit to kind of get the thing going, but bootstrapped it all, haven't had to take any loans yet. And if it probably wasn't for the VA, I probably wouldn't be able to do it full time. I might have to get a part time job to augment the income of it just because I got employees and stuff like that. But for the most part.
Yeah. So you were in the military, right? Were you in the Army?
Yeah, I did 10 years Army.
Okay. What'd you do in the Army?
I started out as a combat engineer clearing minefields. I was with the K-9 unit from 03 to 06, and then I went to selection and got dropped out of theirs, but I still did enough of the schooling and stuff to pick up my medical certification. I went over to USASOC as a special operations medic for a while, and then got out and did some time as a contractor medic on ground at some embassy security stuff.
Yeah. So what was it like being a contractor? That seems like a pretty cool job, but at the same time, that seems like it's kind of a crazy deal.
For me, I was a glorified like paramedic. I sat around in a truck waiting for things to happen. And the only time I reacted was when like something tactically emergent happened. So if one of the embassy personnel fell and broke their ankle, I wouldn't get called. But if there was an attack on the embassy and we had to react, I would be forced to react for the reaction team. I wouldn't be doing standard medical for embassy personnel. So it was a really relaxed job. I was getting overpaid for not doing very much. It was a lot of time to sit around and read. Some of it I wasted playing video games on my tablet. Some of it I did some really good self-development and medical stuff. And it was a lot of downtime.
Yeah. Do you still do anything in the medical field today?
No, I found that I only had the passion for medicine for, we'll call them expats, all those individuals that have served at one point. When it came to treating general civilians, I didn't have the compassion nor the tactfulness to be able to approach a situation with sometimes the full respect for the patient. I did a rotation, and I'll put this one little anecdote in there, but I did a rotation and for EMT stuff here before I was spinning up to go contracting, and I was working with the local EMS team, and we showed up to a lady's house, and it was like she had her bag packed, respiratory difficulties is what we got called for. and she had her O2 tank on with her mask. Must have been, I hate to assume anybody's weight, but she was pretty morbidly obese, nearly falling off the couch. But you couldn't tell her that her breathing difficulties were caused by the smoking and the obesity. You had to dance around that when you were dealing with them, versus in the military, if they were, you called it like you seen it. And that's why I almost got in trouble. That's why I found out that I wasn't necessarily tuned for civilian medicine. So I found out that maybe woodworking was my better way to go.
Yeah. So have you always had a passion for woodworking? Is that something that you've carried with you throughout your whole life, or is that a new thing?
So I was raised by my grandfather and my father as woodworkers, and I would spend time in the shop, but the part of me leaving and going to the military was to get away from having to do that, to being in a covered in sawdust. And I kind of seen what my dad was doing is like, man, you work way too hard. Like, I want to go get a cush job.
So you joined the military instead.
So I joined the military, and not only that, I told him that's a combat engineer. Like, I want to build stuff and blow stuff up. And he's like, yeah, cool. I got this great job for you. You're going to go walk through minefields. I was like, thanks. So that's what I did. And woodworking wasn't always a passion. I kind of ran from it for a while. And then my grandfather passed away in 2010-ish, and he left me, my father gave me some of his tools. And as I was transitioning out of service, or beginning the transition out of service mentally, is basically when I was kind of knowing that it was my time to get out. I started playing around with these tools. I didn't want to see them going to waste. My wife was like, hey, I got a project for us. Let's build this pallet table. And I'm like, oh, great, pallet table. Pinnacle of woodworking here. But it turned out really well. And it's actually hanging up on my son's wall right now, because it's got a distress map of the United States and the flag on there. And it's got some writing and God we bless on there, or in God we trust on there. So it's become like the first piece that I did on my own. But that was like the catalyst that allowed me to realize that woodworking was like the route to healing for me. I was overcoming chronic injuries, chronic pain, the mental kind of moral degradation of war and everything that it encompasses. And woodworking was what really kind of helped bring me back around to connecting with the better side of me. We'll put it that way.
That's cool. No, I'm glad you found that. I think it's important for everybody to have a hobby. And I've been doing woodworking a little bit myself. It's not going nearly as well as I wish it would, but I've had some successes. Like, I built my own bed out of like 2x6s and like things like that. So yeah, my wife and I were looking at beds, and they were like $1,500. And I'm like, that doesn't seem like that's worth $1,500, because the stuff at, you know, Ashley Furniture, it's like laminated, probably particle board or whatever. And you know, it's like
usually got like this cardboard hexagon like filler, and then it's got like this veneer laminate on top of that. Dude, it's cheap. Like, yeah. Ashley Furniture is like the worst.
Yeah, that's what I thought, you know. So I went to Home Depot, and I got like $100 worth of boards, and you know, and I chopped them up and, you know, glued them all together and nailed them all together. And it looks like a bed that I could probably turn around and sell for like $800, you know, because you see the same exact thing at any flea market, any outdoor craft store. I was pretty proud of myself for not spending $1,500 on a piece of plastic.
Yeah, send me some pictures, man. I'd like to see it. At any point, everybody's got to start their journey in woodworking somewhere. So I'd like to be encouraging.
See if I can tilt the camera a little bit, but yeah, you kind of get the idea, you know?
Yeah. Really simple, like frame around, border around the outside. You use 3/4-inch boards around there?
I think I used 1x4s.
Yeah.
All the way around the outside, and then 1x6s vertically with 1x4s kind of framing it.
Yeah.
But it was a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun doing that, and I found it kind of relaxing, you know, just get out in the garage for a little while and fire up some tools. It's a lot of fun for me. And then the other thing is I built a couple shelves, you know, because then again, you know, if you buy some floating shelves from a store, you know, they're not very good quality, and it's way too expensive for $6 in lumber, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you did floating shelves. How did you mount them to the wall?
I ended up not doing a floating shelf. I just did I just bought 1x4s. And so I had one basically against the wall, one at a 90-degree angle, and then I ripped one down to like 2 inches for the front for the lip, and kind of just did them that way and just screwed them straight into studs. They look great, you know, but
My wife did some very similar ones like that in our daughter's room for magazine catches and book catches. Functional, yeah. It's quick, it's functional. You can't knock it. It looks clean.
Yeah, it'll last forever, you know, and it's perfect for just putting up a couple quick pictures. And you know, the thing that I really like the most that I did is we had an old house that was built in the 30s. It's kind of a bungalow craftsman style. Uh-huh. And we had the original front door that was just in the garage. So I took the glass out and I ripped it down, and then I put new glass back in it and put it together at a 90 degree angle. And now it's a bookshelf in my daughter's room.
Nice.
Yeah. So that was pretty cool. Yeah. I'll send you some pictures when we're done. So that was pretty fun. I like just kind of taking antique things, you know, rather than just throwing them away if they have meaning, you know, and try to use them somehow.
Yeah. And did you find that experience working in the shop was like mentally therapeutic for you?
Oh yeah, man. Cause I'm one of those guys, like I can't sit still and I have to be doing something. And my wife gives me a dirty look on Saturdays when I'm just kind of like pacing around the house. And she's like, you need to go find something to do. So yep. That's usually when she gives me a project. Like I just built a hat rack last weekend. We had some old fascia board or something from her grandma's barn. You know, it's over 100 years old. It's really weathered, but it looks kind of cool. But
yeah.
We're like, what are we going to do with this? So we turned it into a hat rack, and that worked out pretty good. It was a lot of fun.
That was cool.
Yeah.
Send me, I love seeing pictures of your stuff. So please make sure you send some over as you continue working on projects, man. If you ever have any questions, feel free to reach out. That's part of what I'm transitioning into is, not necessarily online consultation and phone consultations. I live right outside of Fort Bragg. So what I'd like to see Balish Woodworks develop into is a place where those active duty soldiers, veterans, their family members can come and utilize the resources of my shop basically, and work on their personal projects. Fort Bragg used to have a skills center that you could do woodworking and framing at, but they shut it down back in the early 2000s. So I'm hoping that we can fill that kind of gap and give those people a safe place to come learn and develop their skills. And, you know, when they get out of service, maybe this is their last duty station and they stay locally, or maybe they don't, they go back to their home of record, but at least they develop several years of experience working with somebody else that's made the transition into a successful business. And to give them pointers, so when they go home, they could take and lead their business to be community leaders versus just, you know, going home and being stuck into, well, it's time to go back to college. It's time to find a 9-to-5. Like, that's not everybody's calling. That's not everybody's purpose. Some people's purpose is to be in the garage sweating every day because that's what makes them feel good.
Yeah. No, absolutely, man. And I'm finding that out. I have a 9-to-5 right now, and there's a lot of days I just want to kick out the window and run away and go do something. I think people probably think I'm weird because I get up and like I'll go walk the stairs, you know, just to kind of burn off some energy and get a little exercise and get some blood pumping. But that's not normal. I'm kind of figuring out for most 9-to-5 people.
Wait a second. This guy's getting up and walking around. Why is he doing that?
Like, yeah. Yeah, I feel like people are looking at me. They're like, how's he going to get any work done? I'm like, I did it, you know, and I need something else to do.
Yeah. Well, maybe if you got up and you realized that if you took a mental break, you can reset and you kind of get that better focus going back into your work cycle, allows you to tackle your work more diligently, more efficiently. Like, there's a lot of benefits in taking breaks, and I force my guys to take breaks every 2 hours for 15 minutes. 8, 10, 12, 2 every day. It's 15-minute break. Sit down, mentally reset, get a snack, make sure your water's topped off. Just take care of yourself for 15 minutes so there's none of that burnout at the end of the day. You're not going home feeling like you just ran a marathon and you got to sit down and rest. I want the veterans that work with me to go home and still feel like they can carry on that semblance of life versus like what I felt like when you go home at the end of the day. Like, just leave me alone. I want to go to bed.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the worst feeling, man. I mean, I feel like that more often than I care to admit, but not so much as I did when I first got out of the military. The first job I had was pretty terrible. And yeah, you're right. After every day, just mentally and physically, you're just like, holy shit, what happened?
you're fighting that internal, that thing that's inside of you that's calling you to be something better than that. That's not saying that the people working there you're better than, but you're called to, for something different, something higher, maybe to lead a business like the podcast that you're developing, right? You hope that one day this is going to be your primary cash crop. You don't got to go to work at a 9-to-5 because this is your purpose. This is where you find connection with people, and this is how you grow your ability to impact others. And I think what you and like the podcasting realm and bringing people together is just so amazing. And I'm just now getting into it. I'm so far behind the technology power curve.
Yeah, I hear you that, man. I mean, podcasting is a new thing for me. I've been doing it for under a year now, and it's just now getting to the point where I feel kind of comfortable in what I'm doing. And I'm not an expert on anything. You know, there's a lot of people out there who are experts in trades. The thing that I've always kind of been good at is just kind of connecting the dots and putting puzzle pieces together. So that's kind of what I'm doing here, is just taking that concept with people, you know. So with you, you're like, now I've got you as kind of a tool in the tool chest. So if I run across another veteran and says like, hey, man, you know, I want to get into woodworking, like light bulb, I know a guy, you know.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what my podcast is all about, is just collecting those people as a focal point, you know, in my podcast to kind of serve the community at large and just connect people with anything and everything that might benefit them.
Yeah. And that's good. It's a lot of times as veterans transitioning out of service, we feel like we lost that connection with the civilian, like we were just talking about, like we don't really fit in with anybody. I tried going back to college and being a physician assistant. I'm a couple credit hours shy of having my bachelor's in sports medicine pre-med, basically. I'm highly educated, but I found out that I wasn't meant to work with civilians in that capacity. What I was meant to do was do that. So, and it's interesting to see how the podcast, like your podcasting realm, just has a way of connecting those same people and offering the resources back the same way that we want to do it with physical trades. You're connecting people on a much bigger scale than I am right now. Like I was listening to your last episode with the young lady that was through MST and overcoming homelessness and stuff.
Oh yeah.
It was amazing listening to other people's stories. It's inspiring one. And it kind of gives you that determination. Like if they can overcome that, like I know I can overcome what I'm going through. And that's part of what the military trained us to do, is adapt and overcome, rise above adversity. I mean, we're primed to be entrepreneurs. We're not primed to necessarily fit inside somebody else's bubble of conformity.
No, absolutely. And I think when I think about veterans today and kind of compare that to some of the stories I hear from like veterans of previous eras, I can't help but think that entrepreneurship in my mind is kind of like the answer, and at least part of the answer anyway, to a way to help veterans. So if you think about historically, like when men would come back from the war, you know, they would do something like go start a farm, right? Because maybe the government gave them some land as part of their payment. Or if they had money, they would go and buy land and start a farm, which is a very entrepreneurial endeavor, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's kind of the key. I think not everybody is going to be able to transition and do that standard American thing of go to college and get a 9-to-5 job. It's just not in the cards for everybody. We're just not wired that way. So I think if you can find something of your own creation to get excited about, whatever it is, it doesn't necessarily even have to be a full-time job or a multi-million dollar company. You know, if it's something you like doing, just you got to find something to get excited about. You know, even if it's just in your spare time.
Yeah, something that ignites that deeper passion inside of you, something that draws that out of you, that initiates that drive to push yourself to achieve more than what you have been. It's something you were just saying, it kind of triggered a thought inside of me. A generation ago, my father was trying to push me to go to college because the trades were, you know, college is this new and exciting thing. That's the pathway to success. And we're actually seeing that people that go to trade school developments and they get out, they're having more lucrative careers without all the college debt. So what's true success there? Is true success going and getting a 2 or 4 year piece of paper that says you fit into the bubble, or is true success finding something that ignites that passion and leads to a stable income? You don't need to be a millionaire to be successful. I pray every day, and I pray to God, just enough that I have, I never forget you, because if I have too much, I can get lost in that thought of materialism and chasing the object versus chasing that self-improvement.
No, absolutely. And I think you hit the nail on the head, you know, with the trends, because I see in the future the college bubble bursting, and then there's going to be a mass exodus away from college and towards things like what you're doing, you know, craftsmanship of various kinds, high technical degrees that don't necessarily mean college degrees, you know, some kind of like a two-year trade school, automation type repair, things of that nature. But as the world gets more and more, I guess, mass produced, I also think that there's going to be an increase in the handmade luxury market too, right? So people aren't going to want the Ashley Furniture stuff. They're going to want something that's real, you know, that you touch it and it feels solid and it looks old, or maybe it is old and it's just, you know, refreshed by somebody like you. And I think that that's going to become more popular, especially in the way the world's going right now.
We're seeing I'm seeing a shift in trends in the way that people are talking about material objects. And I think part of it is education from the artisan aspect. And that's what I consider everybody who works kind of with their hands, an artisan. Like, if you master your trade, you know how to bring art to what you do, you're an artisan. So if we think about that kind of way, if we are able to establish that connection with the community and the artisan is able to educate the community on what actually goes into those goods and how to make those goods, we reestablish that value again versus that overproduction materialistic society. When it breaks, throw it away, get a new one. Like when I was growing up, it was don't throw it away, bring that out to the garage, let's pull that apart, throw it, repair the tenon in there and put it back together, because that's how it was made. It was made to be fixed versus made to fall apart and buy a new one. Like that's part of their business model. That's part of what keeps Walmart and all these press board, particle board furniture companies alive, is because they're affordable, but they plan on you having to buy 3 or 4 of them, or possibly 5 of those pieces of furniture to last the duration of the lifetime. Like I stress, I laughed at it sometimes, like when people come to me and say, man, I seen one at Ashley Furniture for this much. I figured it'd be cheaper getting it custom made. It's like, you got to laugh. Like, and then I got pictures on standby to show people that bring that up too, of, like I said, the hex cut cardboard inside the spacing there that fills the center of those 4x4 gorgeous posts on your bed frame. Like, yeah, those are great 4x4 veneered posts. They're a cardboard cord. And then they got like this particle board, 3/4 inch, sometimes 1/2 inch board, and then like this really nice veneer quality wood on the outside. Like crap.
Yeah.
It's, some people are starting to see that. Some people are starting to understand that that's their business model. That's what keeps them alive. That's what keeps them going. And the more we educate people on that, the more we'll see that shift away, and we'll see people start to value things that are handmade, that are made with more than just glue and screw.
Yeah. Absolutely. My favorite piece of furniture, and I never thought I would say this as a dude, you know, because I never really thought about furniture, but I bought a kitchen table from the Amish. Here in Kansas, there's a large Amish community about 50 miles west of me, and they have a store, and you go in there in that store, and everything in there is like legit. And it's all handmade, quarter sewn red oak stuff. It's just beautiful. So I bought this table. The table cost me, I think, like $1,700 or $1,800, which surprisingly, you know, was the same price that a table at Ashley Furniture was going to cost me. But this has got gears on the inside. So when you open it up, it's on like nice gears and it's so smooth. And in Leaf store on the inside,
Sounds like you got an amazing deal for $1,700.
Yeah, this was a piece of art, man. And my wife gives me a hard time. She says it's my third child, but yeah, it's amazing.
And if you take care of it, you put the maintenance and the love and care into it, that table will last your kids' lives, your grandkids' lives. Like that's something that'll be around forever. Like that's something that you could truly build family and memories around. Versus, you know, that table that you ran to Lowe's or you ran to Ashley Furniture or one of these other fabricators, and you move the first time and you find out that the base is hollow cord and, you know, you're throwing it away, and there goes all the memories that you had with that table.
Yeah. You know, no, absolutely. So what would you say that your favorite thing to build is?
Man, I listened to a man, and I hate name dropping people, so I'm going to just leave the name out of there. But when we get around to comments or whatever, it's the next one. I stole that from him. I asked him what his favorite particular thing was, and he said it was the next one. So I have to give him credit for that statement. But it's the next project. It's the next vision I get to create. I have a lot of great visions that I've created for people. One of my favorite previous projects, it was a challenge, and that's why it was my favorite, was combining the Live Edge epoxy river with like inanimate objects that float in the epoxy at different elevations. So it was, It was taking a relatively simple concept and taking it to the next level. And for me, that was a favorite because it was a new challenge in regards to using the basic concepts to achieve a more advanced result. But I would have to say that my favorite project, what inspires me, is the next one, the next vision that I get to create for that person that comes in and says, "Hey, man, I have this unique thing. My grandmother's tree fell down behind her house, and I want to turn this log into something, whatever it is." Like those, that's what drives me, is that unique vision. And the little things, the cutting boards, the coasters, the rolling pins, those are things that are quick. I can teach other veterans to produce, that keeps them employed and allows me to maintain like a normal e-commerce market while transitioning from those nice, unique visions of projects that I get to do every now and then.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome, man. That I'm going to have to start using that too, the next one, because that's exactly how I feel. Like, I'm excited about this. This is awesome. But then, you know, I'm excited about the next one too. And there's a right and a wrong way to kind of like keep going for the next thing. And I think you've kind of nailed it down. You know, you've got that passion for what you do, and the next project is the most exciting one. So you're definitely in it for the long haul if you got that attitude.
Yeah, I appreciate it. And like I said, I can't take credit for that statement. It was like one of those, like when I realized what he said, because before that I would say I will always wake up trying to be slightly better than when I went to bed. And it didn't quite put it to words the way that the next project it does. You know, I think it surmises the total encompassing belief behind it all. The next challenge, the next thing you get to build, the next thing you get to see or experience is more exciting than the past experiences, because we'd rather live in the moment.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So you have an e-commerce site. So what kind of items are you selling on there?
My big traffic items are cutting boards. And then I got my t-shirt. I had some graphic design just worked on a t-shirt. It's kind of me, the hat, the beard, all on a thing with some Ballish Woodworks logo on there. But for the most part, coasters, home goods, like stuff you would see in your kitchen, rolling pins. We got some egg cartons that are made out of wood. So we got farm fresh eggs. We got a couple of chickens out back that lay a couple eggs for us a day. So we bring them inside, we put them on our countertop and leave them fresh. Coasters, I do some like R&R coasters. They got like a drink rest in it, and it's got like a little slot for a cigar so it don't roll off the side of your bench while you're sitting there. We're still building the e-commerce side of things. It's a relatively new thing for Ballish Woodworks. A lot of my stuff until now has been like custom commission projects, and we've slowly been building the website. But if you guys want to stop by and check it out, it's www.ballishwoodworks.com, and it's B-A-L-L-A-S-H. Some people pronounce my name Balash because it kind of sounds a little bit better. I've heard it a million different ways, so I don't get offended by people pronouncing my name incorrectly anymore. It's kind of the military bred it out of me. But
yep. So people can find you on social media too, all over the place, I assume?
Yeah, Balish_Woodworks on Instagram, and I think it's just Ballish Woodworks, all one word, on Facebook. I couldn't get the... Facebook was giving me some trouble about switching over to the underscore in between, something about like, oh, it doesn't give you full. They're weird about stuff sometimes with my website. But yeah, we're on social media. I do most of my postings and my daily updates through Instagram, and it posts automatically through Facebook. I'm getting better at automating that process and trying to get better photography quality, but working on improving the way I articulate things through the wording and stuff like that. We're getting ready to do a leather working class, and we just started a blog on our website as well, where we're going to be doing like bi-weekly videos of just quick how-tos of things where if you're a beginning level woodworker, might be advantageous to know. Like last week we did, what's a board foot? What exactly is a board foot? How do you measure board foot and that? How does that go into real-time applications? So you go out and let's say you're a DIYer and you want to buy a cookie worth of wood, a round piece of wood for a coffee table. How do you make sure that when you go out there, you're not getting ripped off by the guy? How do you measure board foot on that? So we're getting ready to start developing some more educational-based blog type stuff on the website as well, but it's been a growing experience. It's something that I look forward to kind of mastering as I move forward in my Balish Woodworks journey.
Yeah, definitely. Well, that's awesome, man. Hey, I want to thank you for coming on the show. It's been a lot of fun.
I appreciate you having me, and thank you for the great conversation, man. I do appreciate every opportunity to get out there and talk to people about what I'm doing and engage with you and network and continue to get to know guys in the veteran community.
Yep, we'll do it again sometime.
Thanks, man. Take care.
You too. Bye.
Hey, thanks for tuning back into American Heritage. I hope you've enjoyed it. If you have, go to my website at www.AmericanHeritagePodcast.com and click the donate tab. If you do that, you'll help me grow the show and also leverage my podcast towards helping homeless veterans. I do a lot of work with Passageways LTD. I'm kind of their spokesperson. I use my podcast and my YouTube and all that cool stuff to leverage my ability to spread the message to you guys to help homeless veterans. They're doing awesome things in the community. So if you donate to my show, it helps me help them. So once again, www.AmericanHeritagePodcast.com. Check it out. And while you're there, hit the merchandise tab. Check out the t-shirts. They're made by Really Designs and they're really awesome. So check it out at www.AmericanHeritagePodcast.com.